Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are here on Democratic Perspective. The voice you're not hearing is Steve Williamson. You're hearing Mike Cosentino. And we have a guy here we often have on the show, Gary LeMaster. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning.
We are going to talk about poverty today. And, of course, when we talk about poverty, it's one of those things that nobody's poor. But when you talk about poverty, you have to talk about minimum wage. You have to talk about food assistance. There's so many things that are related to income, and we have lots of things. And then we can talk about brain development. All of this stuff is related. I believe in America, what we're going to show today on Democratic Perspective is that we are consuming our young. Corporations are consuming our young. Government is consuming our young. Not a good social policy. It's not really, if you ever wonder why you go to a meeting, of some significance and everybody's old, is because young people are all playing video games. I mean, their brains are mush. Are there economic reasons why, at least in part, that young people are not so involved in the civic life of communities? And I suspect that by the end of our talk today, that, at least in part, we're gonna have some, evidence that, that it is a lack of money, that it is poverty that, prevents social action and act, even just social participation, which is critical for American life. This is what it's all about. So we are going to talk statistics. We have some of those.
I always have a lot of them.
Yes, Gary, we can count on Gary for statistics. But to organize this a little bit, obviously, I'm not going to talk too much about world poverty. We see the advertisements on television for assistance, and I think that's part of the reason why nobody in Yavapai County or Sedona, Arizona, considers themselves poor. That word has just so much negative connotation.
We tend to isolate ourselves from the poverty around the world, but I think the last week has kind of brought it into the state of Arizona and into some focus for all of us, is that we have 48,000 children that have tried to enter the United States by themselves without their families. And the reason for this is they're coming from Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador, which have political issues, many of which were created by our own corporations in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And they're escaping extreme poverty. They literally have no choice. And so now, it may not be our problem. Their country's issues may not be our problem, but they're becoming our problem because they're now, sitting in a warehouse in Nogales, and we have more on the way.
Well, and I have to wonder, when we hear, and this is from the census data website, we have 471,000 Hispanic children in Arizona living 200% below the poverty level. We've got almost 500,000.
And it's easy to write those off as being, illegal or undocumented immigrants, but today the that would be a minority, I believe.
Well, that argument always makes me crazy. That conservative argument makes me nuts. I mean, whatever their status, they're driving your cabs and your buses and they're feeding you food. And you've given this speech before. I prefer that they have health care, and I prefer that, my bus driver and my taxi driver and my train driver and my bus boy, all of those things, or the assistant in the medical office, that he can take a day off when he's sick rather than coming to work all the time. So I want his kids and or his or her kids to have an education. You know, I want them to be productive members of the society that they're for a while they're here. The we want to talk about this. There are amazing statistics here, especially related to the state. Now, Yavapai County, and we found some good statistics for Yavapai County in some ways. And I think Sedona skews the balance here, probably when it comes to things like median household income and home values and those sort of indicators of poverty. But good on us, you know. So we're not going. This is not a complete gloom and doom picture when it comes to those two factors. Like I said, home values some of these other economic indicators. Yavapai County as a whole, not too bad.
But the state as a whole has got, in 2010, I believe it was, we became the second most impoverished state in the union. And, I couldn't find statistics on where we stand as of today, but our percentage of, people living in poverty is significantly higher than the national average. We have a child poverty rate that's 5% higher than the U.S. average. We have 27% of children in Arizona living in poverty. We have 13% of seniors living in poverty. That's pretty much the national average. And we have 17%, more than 17% of women living in poverty. And then when you get into single-parent families or households, the statistics for poverty soar. I mean, and these are primarily, we have 39% of single parent families are living in poverty, and these are primarily, single moms, the dad, runs off or whatever happens and the mom is left to deal with the kids. And, this to me is one of my pet issues is, if you have somebody as a single parent, raising young children, what do you do for daycare? If you're on a minimum wage job or a low wage job, if you don't qualify for public assistance for daycare, you have this, half your salary ends up going to take care of your kids while you're working.
So many Arizonans fall into that category. They're working. They have, and yet so much of their money goes to daycare. I'm looking at the extreme poverty rate for Arizona, almost 1 in 10, what they call the extreme poverty rate. The ones that get to me most are low income families that work. 40% are considered low income. But they have jobs. Minimum wage in Arizona is $7.90 for those of you that were unaware, and almost one out of four jobs in Arizona are considered low wage. So it's not surprising that 4 out of 10 families that are working are in low wage situations.
And the extreme poverty rate, really goes towards hunger. These people are living in a constant state of hunger, and the only thing that they have often is the children have the lunch programs through the schools, the federal lunch programs assistance,
right?
And that may be the only meal they get each day. And we were talking before we went on the air. Those people, the people that go to bed hungry, they probably know that they're poor. But Mike and I were talking before the air that we both were raised in poor families. You know, I was a child of a farm couple that we basically just scraped by on 160 acres, and yet I never knew that I was, you know, was poor until I got to college. I knew that our family was different because we didn't have electricity until I was five. And,
Gary, and, that's dirt poor. I knew some poverty, but we had electricity, Gary.
We didn't have running water until I was in high school.
We had running water, Gary.
We had to have electricity to have running water. So you grow up and that's what you know. And you don't realize that you're different until you're around people with you know, middle class and above. And so by the time I got to college and worked my way through college, I realized that all these people had things that I never had.
Well, that's it. A lot of our talk this morning is focusing on children, as it should. And they are impacted by poverty probably more than anyone else. But I want to, the Arizona Children's Action Alliance, let me get the name right, has some really interesting statistics, but one of the things they focus on is grandparents, that in Arizona, 155,000 grandparents are raising their grandchildren. And one in five of those, 21%, over one in five, are living in poverty. And you can just imagine, I know it happens over and over, that you're living on some sort of minimal $800 a month Social Security income. And then probably working some low wage job
and part time.
Well, for whatever reason, lots of people who worked self-employed and didn't contribute, and many end up with the minimum or at least close to the minimum when they turn 65. And so it doesn't always have to be necessarily low wages. They just had whatever, I mean, it doesn't have to be minimum wage jobs, whatever boom and bust they went through as a self-employed individual. When it comes time for Social Security, hopefully they have enough quarters to collect, and if they do, then they get the minimum.
That was a big problem in the Midwest with farm wives.
Farm workers, absolutely.
You know, the wives especially never had any Social Security deductions taken. Often the business was all in the husband's name, and so the wives get to retirement or get so old they can no longer work on the farm, and there was no Social Security available for them.
So the stats are interesting. One of the statistics I really like that I've been touting lately is Elizabeth Warren, my hero from Massachusetts, certainly my candidate for president. She's, and
I would agree with that.
Thank you. Is lecturing lately on that productivity. Let's just talk productivity here when we talk about wages and productivity. If the minimum wage had just kept up with productivity, how much more value a single person has to the organization that they are working for.
I always like to take issue with the whole productivity, the term.
Yes, it is kind of a.
For many years, I thought, gee, this is a really good thing. You know, it sounds terrific.
Yeah,
you know, we get more for less. You know,
exactly.
We get more products turned out with fewer workers. It sounds like a great deal, and it is for the owners of the corporation.
Exactly.
But with computers and robotics and other things, our productivity has soared.
If it had kept up, Elizabeth Warren tells us, the minimum wage would be $22 an hour.
Right.
But the minimum wage we just said is $7.90 here. And so the difference between $7.90 and $22 an hour, where did that money go, Elizabeth asks.
And all to the top.
It didn't go to the workers, obviously.
It goes to the shareholders and especially the CEOs.
So there's all kinds of indexes that you can use, perhaps, you know, that we have the cost of living for various things. So if I, just even if they just use productivity, something close to their heart, people would be there would be much fewer people in poverty, much fewer children living in poverty in America.
Certainly, working poor. The other thing is if you look at it from an inflationary standpoint, you know, the minimum wage was instituted in what 1960, you know, the 60s. I don't remember, but if you took the minimum wage from the 60s and you had it grow with inflation, it would be now $10.52 an hour when it's currently $7.25 an hour.
Wow.
So it's, you know, it's been this increasing burden on the working poor. You know, the interesting thing is this may get, you know, the Congress has been trying to wrestle with this and trying to get a, you know, Democrats have been trying to get a, minimum wage raised to $10.10. The interesting thing is that it may never get through Congress, but the states and the cities may take care of it.
Yeah.
Because now Seattle has raised their minimum wage to the nation's high of $15 an hour.
Right, over the next few years. You know, that's going to be phased in slowly. But yeah, that seems perfectly reasonable. I have no idea what the cost of living is like in that area.
That's a kind of another pet issue of mine is we tend to think of the United States as a whole. And, I was caught in the middle of an argument between a client and my bosses in New York, for the New York ad agency. And the client was upset that the CEO of the ad agency was making as much as he was. And this is the CEO of Hormel was upset. And so they were making the same amount and he was like, well, who's the client here? And, I told him that, well, we're a public, corporation we actually generate more money than Hormel does. And where would you, if you made a half at the time, this was in the mid 80s, their salaries were $500,000 a year. And I said, where would you rather have $500,000 a year? In Austin, Minnesota, or in New York City? You know, in Austin, you know, $500,000 a year, you're in the 1%. $500,000 in New York, you're doing quite well, but it's not nearly the high salary that he thought it was.
We want to talk about some other statistics here. The South and Southwest have the highest levels of poverty. In other words, predominantly these red states, invariably in report after report after report, are the largest users of public assistance. So you talk about voting against your self-interest.
They're also, interestingly, the most anti-government,
yeah.
Yet they use the most federal government resources.
Yeah, it is a bizarre situation that I can't begin to explain. I can, actually. It's the incredible success of the lying media. One of the reasons we started Democratic Perspective, lowly 3 years ago, was simply that. Simply, we were so outraged and shocked at the misinformation being put out there by the other side. The conservatives were just, first of all, it was distortions then it became lately out and out lies. There's much to be gained, apparently, if you have a media voice by lying. And the punishment is non-existent, and the gain is great for a time. Now, there's plenty of things out there that will counteract your lie, but chances are pretty good that the people who first were exposed to the misinformation aren't going to hear the correct information.
Yeah, I think we all expect that you know, media commentators and politicians, you know, deal in half truths and spin where they.
See, I expect that now, but I didn't expect it before.
Yeah, I think a more recent development, but. And I always tie it back to the end of the fairness doctrine, but but now, you know, it's I think we all expect that both sides, you know, spin things to their benefit, but now it's gone over the top to where they're just complete fiction. It's outright lies.
And that's it. There's a difference between perspective. I agree with you. And then there's lies. The NRA lies.
You know, I expect both parties.
That's not perspective.
You know, I expect both conservatives and liberals to have different points of view and look at issues from different ways. I think that's healthy. Where I think it gets really unhealthy is when they continue to, you know, politicize everything, and, you know, like climate change and poverty and the minimum wage and then just tell outright lies about it.
I do think Obama is keeping his eye on the big picture. He believes that this is, I think, an unusual time in American politics. This level of not doing what's the most good for the most number, for the largest good for the largest number, this concept of the loyal opposition has gone away. The whole idea, and I think I've said it on the show before, that you really, you know, you could choose to be involved in politics or not, because, well, pretty much eventually the people running things did the reasonable thing. I mean, it's not reasonable to take food away from children. Who would save $4 billion to cut food assistance, to cut the SNAP program, to cut food stamps, as we call it? Of course, food stamps aren't stamps anymore. We all know that. Get a little card loaded with some money on it. When the money's gone, the food is gone. It's pretty that simple. But who would cut food, the food for children, especially to the tune of what is a measly, right? It's almost ridiculous to say $4 billion. But yeah, they did that.
$4 billion is far less than the fence we're building across the state of Arizona.
far less than an aircraft carrier. I mean, and we can feed millions of children. We haven't got into it necessarily yet, but we I don't know that we will. But development.
I have to interject some statistics. You know, that's what.
Yeah, give me some stats.
Kind of based on that in Arizona we have half a million. You know, nearly 500,000 children on food stamps. As long as you're talking about that, I mean, to me that's. You know, in the last election cycle, we had this whole discussion over the 47%, the givers and the takers.
Right.
You know, we had 47% of the population in Mitt Romney's view were takers, that they were taking more out of the economy than they were putting in. And then we started looking at all of the corporate welfare and all of the welfare going to the wealthy. Now we're starting to look at the money being, you know, kept offshore and tax shelters. And there was a thing I read yesterday that if you took that money, the money that was sheltered offshore to avoid taxes, and brought it into the United States, forced those people to bring it into the United States and pay taxes on it like you and I.
Right.
That would amount to I think it was $63 billion a year in revenue for the United States. You know, what could you do with $63 billion a year? You could end poverty. You know, you could end the problem of kids coming out of college with, you know, extraordinary debt, you know, with $100,000 in debt before they even start their careers.
Well, you could pay 10% of the Pentagon's budget with $63 billion.
If you listen to the right in Arizona, you would believe that the darn federal government has taken all our money and never given us anything back in return, and they're not doing their job and taking care of our forests and taking care of our border. But in reality, we get more than double of what we pay into the federal government in income taxes and other taxes. We get more than double that back from the federal government in food stamps for our children and
roads, schools,
jobs, for military bases.
Highway out there. Yeah, somebody else built that, the sidewalk. I mean, it's exciting after living around here for 40 years to actually see sidewalks coming in. This is, to see people now walking down the side of the road. But you collected some. I want you to talk about brain development just real quick. The cycle of poverty is poverty breeds poverty. When I worked for Tommy Anderson in Oak Creek Canyon, he was a famous conservative curmudgeon, at least in his local area up there in the canyon. He said, poor people have poor ways. And so it took me about, 20 or 30 years to process that comment. But what he was talking about was the cycle of poverty, that you can't borrow money except at exorbitant interest rates if you get it. You are so involved when you don't have enough money. You're so involved in getting it and find and use and being able to stretch it or use it. It takes that the other things in your life become less. You're just so much less productive. You have a stat there on how much of your attention it takes. And I think we all know this. Everybody that's ever gone through a downturn knows what it does to you. The emotionally and physically.
The stats I found is this is from a website called Social Work Degree Center, and these are legitimate statistics. Poverty's mental burden is akin to losing 13 IQ points. In other words, just dealing with the day-to-day grind of trying to make a living and put food on the table has the effect of kind of numbing your mind.
Yeah, sure.
It's the equivalent of pulling an all-nighter. In college, I often had to pull all-nighters because I screwed around too much during the quarter, but, I'd have to do an all-nighter or more for a test. But, imagine having that, the effects of that every day. It's like not ever having.
What's it? I want to quote you here. Poverty imposes such a massive cognitive load on the poor that they have little capacity left to do many of the things that might lift them out of poverty. And so this is what we mean by the cycle of poverty. And I defy anyone out there that has, like I said, experienced a downturn not to agree with this. The adjustment period, if there is, it's just so difficult to focus on anything other that would lift you out of poverty.
Trying to figure out how to pay each bill, when each bill is due, and it takes up a massive amount of your brain power and your time to figure out what bills you have, when you're going to get paid for when you're going to get your check, when the bills are due, and which ones you can pay when, and what if you can't pay them all. It's just an astounding drain on people. And the other thing is, I think the effect on children is that you know, kids may not know that they're impoverished, but what they do know is what their parents are going through. And so right. they see the anguish of their parents, and that becomes their basis of knowledge of what life is like. And they have a very, different worldview. It's like, you know, coming from a poor farm going to college. I had no idea all of the avenues, you know, for, you know, careers available to me. They'd never, you know, I had never experienced them, never thought about them, never, right. never occurred to me. All I really knew was farming and small town, you know, retail. That was really my worldview in terms of available careers. Wow. And suddenly it was like the smorgasbord of things I could do, you know.
And what I like now is what you experienced. You know, 60% of those jobs are gone. They're not even in existence. You know, there's a whole different smorgasbord out there. So it's hard to give advice unless you educate yourself, or at least even have an intelligent discussion with a young person or with somebody in the working world.
It's changing so rapidly. When I was in college, you know, the big thing, this was in the early 60s, the big thing was, with the space program, a lot of kids wanted to get into aerospace engineering. That was,
right.
And there was a huge demand for it, you know, cause we were in the midst of the Apollo and Gemini programs. And by the time many of those people graduated, The space program, you know, we'd already landed on the moon and the space program was being cut back. And by the late 70s, that career path had basically, you know, disappeared.
Drawn up, sure.
Yeah, it was still in existence, but it was a much smaller, path. And so all those people had to go, retrain themselves and re-educate themselves to find something else. And that's going on at a much more frequent pace now.
Much faster. There are jobs and you and I couldn't define to save our lives. There are job descriptions, positions, different analysts, different, especially in middle management, that in some of the corporations in Phoenix that we have no idea. The other stat I like that you found was, and this is huge, that poverty is a huge risk factor in mental illness. Don't have enough money, and then that becomes, once again, these perpetuating things. The state has an interest. The state has a huge interest in feeding and food, clothing, shelter for its citizens, if nothing else, to dampen the effects of mental illness on the rest of the citizens and the rest of us.
And you can see the effects of mental illness. We've cut back our mental illness programs. You know, when you look at the overall economy, there was a statistic out last week that we have now recovered all of the jobs that were lost in the Great Recession. The one thing that is seldom talked about is that, and the big drag on the economy, since the beginning of the recession has been all of the layoffs in state and local governments. You know, those public sector jobs have never come back, and they're all public sector at the low end, you know, the local and state level.
Right.
And a lot of that is from programs for, mental illness and,
right.
and dealing with poverty, other things. And you can see the effects of mental illness in all of the mass shootings we've had. Almost every one of the shooters has had severe mental issues.
Right.
And, not saying that poverty causes all of those. You and I were impoverished and we didn't go that way, but it's real easy for somebody who has, is on the edge and has some minor, mental illness for that to become a major mental illness by thinking that the world is against them and developing all of these conspiracy theories about everyone and everything around them. And with the easy availability of guns and the lack of universal checks for mental illness for purchasing a gun, that's why I believe we're getting so many of these mass shootings.
You know? Well, and that's, I'm sure it's a huge factor. Poverty is a touchy issue. It's so personal. It's difficult to talk about. Because it's an insult.
And it's difficult to get people who aren't impoverished interested in it, you know, to really do something about it.
They tend to blame the, it's your fault.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's no initiative on the part of the impoverished. They didn't work hard enough to go to school. They didn't do well enough in school, and on and on and on. It's they're the 47%, and they're just takers. They're not job creators. And we've created these two classes and pitted them against one another in our political discourse, but. It really affects, poverty for others really has an impact on all of us. It's a drain on the economy. If you're upset about giving and having your taxes go to help someone else, if you can find ways to get those people out of poverty, then the amount of your taxes going to help them greatly diminishes. And you increase productivity, there's that word again.
There it is.
But you increase our overall productivity of the country, and you generate more revenue that allows us to do things like rebuild our infrastructure and things that we desperately need to do. So it really does have an impact on all of us.
Well, that's the key, the conversation stops when they say, well, I don't want part of my taxes going to pay for this or that. I don't want anybody on food stamps to be able to buy, paper products with.
And you can always find the exception. You can always find the anecdotal, incident that spurs the anger. But when you look at it from a statistic standpoint, the amount of fraud on food stamps and other, help programs, yeah, safety nets, is really, statistically insignificant. It's like less than 1% with food stamps.
And it's true. Then they get the headlines. The doctor that cheats on Medicare, but we're reading about him or her, and that person is going to jail, or at least they're being fined. The welfare queen, whatever, compared to the good that it does, if I took all the millions of people and put them in that corner and the benefit that they get from financial assistance, from food assistance, especially from the American governments, whatever they are.
And you can find far more anecdotal, stories about people who were helped out of poverty and have become very successful in careers and built businesses with the early assistance. Even my favorite, Paul Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Admitted that he was, the guy that was a vice president candidate with Romney, and one of the most angry people, angry towards the poor. Even he admits that he got public assistance, early on. This doesn't have to be a continuing cycle. If we use our money carefully and monitor it, we can help people out of poverty and turn them into big success stories, or at least, contributors.
The numbers are staggering. That it takes so little. It seems like so little. Colorado raised in the first 3 months $143 million, and you could from its taxes from its marijuana sales. $143 million, that's huge. What an impact that would have on the state of Arizona. My favorite thing, of course, my favorite is what is called the transaction tax, the financial FTT.
I'm glad you brought that up. The Robin Hood tax.
Robin Hood tax. I'm not crazy about that name because although the media certainly has glommed onto that, but so have the organizations promoting it.
And it's not, you know, I understand why you don't like the name because it implies that you're taking from the rich and giving to the poor.
That's right.
But, and it's really not that at all. It's charging a half of a percent?
Well, there's been various things thrown out there. Right now it's a half a cent.
On any financial transaction, stock and equity sale on Wall Street.
Yeah.
And it's been done in other countries. It's been tried here before, if I remember.
It's been done here before, yeah.
It's particularly important with the speed trading that's
right.
going on. We now have companies that have set up shop across the street from Wall Street so they can cut the computer time that it takes to complete a transaction by milliseconds
right.
so they can game the system. So they make thousands and thousands of trades a second. And you know, all of that does is, you know, what that does is screw up the markets for what they're intended to do is to provide capital long term for companies. And it hurts the individual investors dramatically. So by just penalizing them for, you know, a half a cent on each transaction would, if they want to continue to do the speed trading, at least we'll make a lot of, the government will make a lot of money off of it.
Yeah, that's a whole other issue, but the financial transaction tax, certainly is promoted by the National Nurses Network, one of the most effective unions, left in America. Why there's not, I'm hopeful that we're going to see an increase in union activity. And by that I say I can't understand why people aren't organizing.
We tend to hold up Germany as a model, you know, for economics, and they have labor unions. They have strong labor unions, and they even have labor members sitting on the board of directors of
right.
each of the corporations, and they have a union for the CEOs.
There you go. They need a union. But the idea
let's talk about our sponsors.
Let's talk about, sure.
We have a couple of things coming up, events coming up, for the Democrats of the Red Rocks, one of our sponsors, along with Democrats of the Verde Valley. There's a movie this, tomorrow night, June 10th at 6 p.m. at the Sedona Public Library. The movie is called Damnation.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
It's about, all of the dams that have been built in the United States over the years and that have really kind of messed up our environment and no longer necessary.
That's the part they have to prove that to me. I don't see how a dam is no longer necessary.
Well,
hydroelectric power is clean power.
Well, not all of them have, you know, power generating capabilities, but you'll have to see the movie.
And, yes, I will.
And who is it that's going to be there?
Katie Lee.
And
I heard that. Katie Lee from Jerome, the famous, anti-Glen Canyon Dam lady, there's musician, and yeah, she'll be there.
And on the June 19th at 8 a.m. at Old Sedona restaurant, bar and grill, there's going to be a candidates forum for candidates for the Sedona City Council.
Right, yep. At Democrats of Red Rocks will be sponsoring that candidates forum down at the Old Sedona Bar and Grill with their monthly breakfast. Check it out. You can check out this broadcast and others at bbid.org. You can listen to all our old shows. We do all the time. bbid.org is our website for our broadcasts. Thank you.
Have a great day.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.